Hello?
Hey, this is Ben from Jukebox the Ghost.
Hey, Ben. Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Sorry I was late on that one. I was at a diner and I lost track of time.
Totally fine. Totally fine. So I want to ask about the deluxe edition of Off to the Races, which features four new songs that you've been teasing for a little over a year by this point. And you mentioned that you were going to release it maybe as like an EP with these four songs. So what made you want to do the decision to reissue the entire album over just releasing an EP?
Well, because when we made those songs, we actually recorded them at the same time as the rest of the album. So in our minds, they're all still very sort of intrinsically connected. And so we wanted to make sure it felt attached. We always record more songs than we anticipate being on the record. And this time there happened to be four more. And we love the songs. And it's just we made aesthetic decisions as to what the whole record would feel like. And they didn't make it on it. So at the end of the day, we just still wanted people to feel like they were part of the record that they had been listening to.
And the inclusion of the acoustic cuts of the songs as well?
We wanted to always, you know, find a way to reimagine the songs and have a different interpretation of it. And, you know, most of the songs are written on acoustic instruments, and we wanted the chance to perform them and test them out and play them in a studio a little stripped down.
When you're recording, or rather writing your songs originally, do you use some sort of like online program that you plug in your acoustic recordings into, or do you like go old school and do you like handwrite your songs?
It depends. I really love handwriting lyrics when I can. It's been a long time since I've written out actual, you know, notes. I'm a classical pianist. That's sort of my background is in composition also. So I'm capable of it, but unfortunately it's a slower way to do it. So most of the time I'll, you know, write at the piano and get voice memos. And then when it comes time to flesh it out, you know, put it onto a computer program, and we all have ways of recording at home. So record as much as we can, get it sounding as good as we can, you know, in the comfort of our own rooms, and then bring it to each other into the studio.
Do you use a specific program?
Yeah, I use Logic. We're all Logic people. Logic Pro X.
Logical people?
Yeah, Logic. Well, illogical people using a Logic program.
Do you compose music also for yourself, or is it usually just for the band's purposes?
I compose music for myself all the time. And I think we all have other projects. I'm releasing a solo record later this year, and so that's a lot of sort of weirder, classical-inspired pieces. You know, but I'll do orchestral pieces if I'm feeling up for it, just to write them, just to, you know, flex those muscles and make sure I'm staying creative and engaged.
Are you inspired at all by, like, Billy Joel's classical composition album or Ben Folds'
it's
concertos?
Funny, when I was a young kid learning to, you know, play, I had that the book of his sheet music, of his classical pieces, and loved them. So yeah, I mean, look, I think anyone who can push beyond what it is that they, you know, became famous or became known for doing, I think that's great. And, you know, Billy's got the chops and the ability, and I hope to think I do too.
That's for sure. I mean, you're writing arrangements, I know, right now for the Louisville Civic Orchestra on June 26th. My question here is, how does one translate a pop song or an alternative song into a more classical context without losing the essence of either medium?
Here's the thing. I could go on about this ad nauseum. I'm a classical person at root. Every song that I write is coming actually from a place of my classical background. It's informed by the progressions that I played, the Beethoven, you know, chord structures, or, you know, classical ways of treating music. I think it's as rock and roll as anything. And so it's just picking the pieces from each, you know, genre that makes sense. And, you know, the orchestra can be treated like a synthesizer. It can be treated like a drum kit. It can be treated like a guitar solo. So it's just using those sounds to recreate what it is that we've put on a record or put into a song.
What songs can we expect to hear then from the Louisville Civic Orchestra when you play there?
The songs that are so far done that I think are Everybody's Lonely, Somebody, So Let Us Create. I'm currently working on Jump Started. Spiritual should also be in there, and then a couple others. So we might have 8 or 9 songs all told with the full orchestra.
That is so cool. That is like, do you feel that is kind of where your career has been leading up to? Because I feel
I'll
like
tell
when
you, it is definitely a peak for me. It's a real accomplishment. It's really exciting. And, you know, it's not only the 12 years of writing and touring with this band leading to this, but it's also my entire life classical training leading up until this moment to be able to write these arrangements.
Do you ever think what would have happened in your musical career had you not been classically trained? Like, how has that influenced your music so far?
I can tell you right now that I wouldn't still be doing it. Because if I hadn't had that training from early on, I don't think I would have developed the love for music and performance that I currently have. And I started playing when I was 6. I started doing music education stuff at 4. It has been as central a part of me as, you know, family and food and breathing for as long as I can remember.
Are there any instruments that you haven't explored yet that you would like to explore in the future?
Any instruments? I mean, I only play piano. I understand a lot of instruments. I've always wanted to actually be able to play nicely the theremin. I think, like, it's a very... Do you know that instrument? It's
That's like the one that goes, woo! Yeah. Another one.
It's wild and very, very difficult to actually make it sing, but when it works, it makes it sound like an opera singer, and I think it's just the coolest thing.
Like a Twilight Zone-y kind of thing going on, right?
Yeah.
That'll probably go well on your Halloween shows.
Yeah, we could do that.
You've described yourself also as an incredibly competitive person. Do you find yourself comparing yourself to other contemporary bands in terms of followers and listening numbers because of that?
Yeah, I do, and I wish I didn't, but I also think it's sort of a product of the world that we live in, that's how it works. You know, and there's different ways of looking at it. I can look at our Spotify numbers compared to other bands and feel like we don't have as many plays. But then if I can turn around and see that we're drawing 5-6 times as many people to shows as another band with more plays than we have. So, you know, we have successes and victories and statistics that I'm enormously proud of. And there's just, like, always ways to improve and find other ways to keep developing and try to reach more people.
I mean, I hear everybody's lonely in Starbucks so often it is almost maddening. I think it haunts my dreams by this point. How has that song helped you in the number area, per se?
It's been huge because for the first time really in our career, we've had a song that actually impacted at radio nationally. And so all these people that didn't find us at shows that were just, you know, in their cars or, you know, God forbid, just sitting in a Starbucks during the song for the 30th time, they key in, they listen to it, they find it, they stream it, they download it. And it made a huge difference. It bumps the numbers of that song. It then trickles down to all of our other songs because they become fans. So that's, look, every time a song reaches a point or you know, the band reaches a new milestone, it all attaches to everything else. The song on the radio is going to translate into Spotify streams, and Spotify streams should translate into people coming to shows, and it should be this whole moving, organic thing.
If there was, like, one song that you would suggest people to listen to get into Jukebox the Ghost, what would that song be?
It's funny. I think Everybody's Lonely has been the easy answer, but I love Jump Started. And Jump Started is a really cool sort of example of us being totally zany, musically creative, but also still trying to write a pop song.
Yeah, I heard about how it crashed the computer when you originally recorded it because there's so many takes on it.
Yeah. So I recorded a lot of that at home and in my own space. And then I brought it into the studio and there were 140 vocal track, and their computer did not like that.
Holy moly. How long did that take to record all of Jump Started?
It's funny. I did it in a couple manic days. And those vocal tracks are, you know, I'd have 20 of them just doing 1 second of sound, like 20 vocals going, say it again, or all screaming or something. But I chipped away at that over a couple months, but the bulk of that song was written in about three-hour periods over 3 days.
Do you have a certain set of hours that you usually work at?
I never try to call a day. I typically, for me, I spend all day trying to get to the place of a creative space. And then if it never happens, it never happens. But I'm happy if I write something at, you know, 9 a.m. or if I write something at 11:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's just trying to be in the space to let it happen.
Now, I was talking to the greeting committee about a week ago, and the lead singer from the group, Addy, said that you're like a brother to her because you two just toured recently, I believe, right?
Yeah. Yep. She's the best.
And she was saying how she finds a lot of her great ideas on the toilet. And I was wondering, is that a similar situation for Jukebox the Ghost as well?
It is not a creative space for me. But I don't know. Maybe she spends a lot more time on the toilet than I do. Or a lot less. I'm not sure.
Perhaps. Maybe her diet isn't so good.
No,
who knows?
For me, it's when I'm sitting at the piano. That's it for me. And I just sort of let my mind shut off and play and try not to overthink it. And then it just sort of comes flowing out.
What are the ups and downs of using a grand piano for composing your music?
for me, oh God, it's hard for me to come up with a down. For me, it's amazing because it can do everything. It can sing, it can be percussive, it can be chordal, you can do anything. My challenge as a songwriter, and I don't mean this in a braggy, egotistical way, but because I'm as technically accomplished as I am, I tend to overwrite. And so many of the best songs, and my best songs, are the very simplest. And so my great challenge is not overplaying and not overwriting. Writing something that's simple, palatable, but still an amazing song.
And you're talking about like solos, like going too crazy off with the soloing?
Not even solo, just chord progressions and ways of treating a verse. Most songs on the radio are the same four chords over and over and over again. And then a song like Everybody's Lonely, you know, there's some neat chords in the verse and the chorus, but it stays simple. And the bridge has, you know, a key change and a modulation and things, but I tried to do it in a tasteful way that was still palatable.
Mm-hmm. Is that because you want people at home to be able to learn the songs?
No, it's because people like simple. And it's not to say people like dumb. They just, people tend to like something that's understandable. And it's always been a goal of mine to be able to write pop music or write music that people like, but still be able to slip in some more complex musical elements.
Simplicity is key because it's so to the point, essentially.
Yeah. Like, you just think of, to go not too nerdy, but like, you know, Beethoven. Dun, 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 dun. Very, very simple. But then he just expands and expands and expands. But people know that song because they can hang on to that.
Is there a specific song that you look to that kind of screams beautifully simple in its arrangement?
Do you mean of ours or just in general in the world?
In general, yeah. Just like the top of the top in that kind of respect.
That's an interesting question. I tend to think back to like Chandelier by Sia as just let's take that as a pop culture example of a song that is the same couple chords the whole way through. The melody builds. There's not that many parts of the song, and it absolutely slams.
I agree. Yeah. That one just, it's an earworm. I think that's the main thing. So everyone in the band, I know, is enamored by Queen, but according to Setlist FM, ELO and Whitney Houston are your second and most covered artists, respectively. And just like going off the point of a beautifully simplistic song, you cover Mr. Blue Sky, and that's an incredibly complex song. So what exactly is the appeal of ELO and Whitney Houston to you guys?
We just like doing songs that we think are great, that we think cater to our strengths. You know, Mr. Blue Sky is this upbeat, it can be piano-based, guitar solo, again, very palatable, people love it, song. And it's fun for us to play, and it moves around. We benefit from songs that are more complex to show off our musical abilities, and it's more fun live. And, you know, the Whitney Houston, I Want to Dance with Somebody, is the same way. It's a pop song, and everybody knows it, but there's some really cool stuff happening in it. Key changes and everything.
With the increasing appeal of covers, like, I guess, Weezer's Africa or something like that, do you see the band recording an EP or album of covers in the future?
We've talked about it. We've talked about actually recording some Queen covers, too. We'll see how this year goes and what we end up doing.
You've played over 1,000 shows across the U.S. as well and beyond. What have you come to appreciate about transportation and just the same kind of despise about it after all this traveling?
I mean, we are all so jaded by our thousands and thousands of miles in vans. I think we did the math that we've driven around the world in mileage 14 times, in a van. We finally did a bus tour, which makes me appreciate bus drivers and someone willing to drive through the night while I sleep. What it makes me appreciate is that you can always, pretty much anywhere in this country, find a diner and talk to someone that feels like a proper American in any part of the country. And that I appreciate enormously, especially when you get to Europe and it's harder to find little, you know, feel-good food like that.
When you're traveling so much, it must be very hard to find stability, you know, on the road.
It is. It very much is. And it's something that you learn to deal with and to compartmentalize and to take time for yourself whenever you can. But for anyone that's done an extended road trip with anyone or, you know, bands that have been on the road, they'll all tell you that it's hard on the body and it's hard on the mind.
Hmm. How does being on the road affect relationships in particular?
It's a strain, but I'm lucky enough to be with someone who understands and has traveled and gets the feel of it and understands why and how. So I've also been with people that struggled with it a lot more and that I struggled with as well. So it's hard. You know, relationships are meant to be, they're meant to be with the person. You're meant to be able to spend time with them. And when you're traveling, you don't get to. And that's, there's just no way around that being difficult.
Do you bring anything from home that keeps you grounded when you're away for so long?
No, actually. I have, you know, books and notebooks and stuff, but I don't, there's no teddy bear or anything that I carry with me, though I probably should.
Do you read on the road at all?
Yeah, I read a lot, as much as I can.
What are you reading right now?
Right now, I'm reading the Lincoln biography, and I just finished a book about the Donner Party, which is pretty good. So I'm actually in between at the moment. I got to figure out my next big project.
So I know that Victoria is based on Queen Victoria of Old England. Is it the biographies that you're reading that help you formulate new song ideas as well?
That's a good question. I'll answer it like this. It's everything. I whatever I'm reading, listening to, seeing, watching, I try to let that seep in and become part of the music that I create. So it all depends. Hopefully I get something out of it, but that's sort of how I sort of live my life, to try to stay enriched and try to funnel that into my artistic output.
Have you guys ever thought about recording a TV show theme? Because I saw that you recorded something for Peabody and Sherman back in 2015.
Yeah, we would love to. A lot of that is just waiting for someone to ask. We've done a couple podcast themes, which is sort of the new stepping stone to TV. Yeah, we would love to record a TV theme. I think that'd be great. So if you know anybody, send them our way.
That's very interesting. Podcasting themes. How did that come about?
People who are fans of the band and starting podcasts have reached out.
So we can hire you, basically?
Yeah. We're very approachable. People think musicians are in this other world, but we're just your neighbors.
We might have to hit you up for a little jingle for the radio station then.
I'd be
possibly
happy to. Yeah.
That would be amazing. I have a couple more questions before I release you back into the world.
Okay.
So each band member sports kind of similar styles of facial hair. I want to know, what's the draw of the beard for you guys?
Man, I'll just speak for myself. It makes me not look 12. That's been the motive from the very beginning.
I feel that. I can't grow a beard for all my life, pretty much. It is a struggle.
I was actually surprised when I learned that I was able to do it. I've held on to it ever since.
That's amazing. Do you have a least favorite question that you don't want to be asked, essentially?
Yes. Where does the band name come from? It's a big old who cares. And for me, it's just one of those questions that, like, just look it up. It's the first thing that's on our Wikipedia page.
Mm.
You don't need me to answer it. Anyway, that is my number one least favorite.
Do you edit your Wikipedia page at all?
No, we don't. We sort of let it up to, I don't know who does it. Someone's done it.
And one last question. Your tour with the Mowglies just finished, and it's a little disheartening because there were no New Jersey dates planned on the tour from way back when. So are there any plans on returning to the Garden State anytime soon?
I don't know if we have anything on the books, unfortunately. I know we've got a Delaware coming out. We're playing at Firefly Fest, which is an often neglected state as well for us. But look, hopefully we get to Jersey before too long, and we stop neglecting you. It's not personal, I promise.
I feel better now about that. Thank you very much.
Good. You're welcome.
Well, thank you so much for calling in to WRSU. It was lovely talking to you, and hopefully we'll be in contact soon about maybe a jingle.
Yeah, I would love to do it. Cool. Thank you so much for all the questions. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. Have a great day, man.